Well, excited to vote, you arrive at the polls and find a line of voters that keeps going and going and going. In many states, people faced unprecedented waits to vote early this year, and we're told to expect lines in a lot of places tomorrow, too. So, how do you pass the time? Books, headphones, group conga lines? We want to get advice. So if you waited out long lines this year in Florida, Ohio, North Carolina, Colorado, Virginia, or elsewhere, call those of us who'll wait it out tomorrow with advice on voting line do's and don'ts. Our phone number, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We go now to Mandy Trimble, a news reporter for member station WOSU in Columbus, Ohio, with us today from the Veterans Memorial polling location in Franklin County, Ohio. And Mandy, nice of you to be with us today.
Thank you. It's good to be with you, Neil. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Are voters waiting in line there?
Oh, voters are waiting in line here. They've had to open the north end of this Veterans Memorial. The line snakes all the way from the north to the south. And just to give you an idea, it's about a four-hour wait.
Good Lord.
To be able to vote, yeah.
So that's got to be, what, at least 100, 200 people there?
Oh, I would say several thousand.
Several thousand?
I would imagine, yes. There have been 50,000, more than 50,000 people have voted in person at Vets Memorial, and that's since September. And the past several days have been close to 3,000 people each day.
And this is just one place?
This is just one place. There's only one place in Franklin County to vote early. So these are voters from hundreds of polling places that come here to be able to vote.
So if you're going to bring a book, you might want to bring War and Peace.
Right. You would bring War and Peace or maybe Moby Dick or something.
Well, what are people actually doing?
People are listening to iPods. They're reading books. They're talking to their neighbors. The boards of election have actually passed out water and granola bars to people. They're making the best of it. The mood here is pretty light. People are being patient. I think it's because they're determined to be able to vote.
You'll forgive me, but if you're going to wait online for 4 hours, there's occasional certain urgent business that needs to be taken care of.
I'm sorry, Neil. You broke up for just a moment. What was that?
I'm saying, are people willing to hold somebody's place in line while they go visit the men's room or the ladies' room?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There is a restroom, and oddly enough, it's at the front of the line. So I think there are people actually making sure that people do not jump in line. And actually, there was an incident while I was here about an hour ago. A woman had been waiting in line for several hours. Her daughter showed up and tried to get in line with her, and people behind her did get upset and notified some of the sheriff's deputies, and they took care of it, and the woman was not allowed to jump line.
And can you give us some idea of the age of this long, long line? Or are there young people, old people?
Neil, the age varies. I mean, there are folks here in their 20s on up to elderly people being wheeled in wheelchairs. So it's the age runs the gamut.
Because people would suspect that maybe young people wouldn't have the patience and old people would, just be uncomfortable waiting that long.
Absolutely. I spoke with a gentleman who has MS, and luckily he was moved to the front of the line because of his disability. So, but people are, they're being patient.
Could you pass the phone to somebody?
Absolutely. I'm going to pass the phone to David Mortman from Worthington. David, here's David.
Hello. David.
Hello.
Hi, David. How are you?
Good. How are you?
How long have you been waiting in line?
About 3.5 hours so far.
And so you're not that far away at this point?
No, I can actually see voting machines if I get up on my tippy toes.
That's going to be pretty exciting after all this time. What have you been doing to kill the time?
I brought a book to read. I've been talking with my neighbors. I have snacks.
What book are you reading?
I'm reading Neil Gaiman's new book. It's called The Graveyard Book.
I haven't seen that one. He's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it just came out a couple weeks ago.
And so you're making progress in your book, and you feel all of this waiting is worth it?
Oh, absolutely.
And those around you, are they feeling like this is worth it to them? They must be. They've been waiting 3.5 hours.
People look pretty determined to wait it out.
Now, why are you going to such effort to vote today as opposed to tomorrow when there's going to be a lot more places open?
Well, because I'm driving to Chicago tomorrow, actually, for a conference that I'm participating in, and I'm actually also hoping to get into the big rally at Grant Park.
Ah, the big Obama rally that's at Grant Park in Chicago tomorrow. They think there might be a million people there.
That's what they're saying.
And when you so you're absolutely voting sort of absentee because you're not going to be there on election day itself.
I'm sorry, you broke up there, so I didn't quite catch the question.
That's all right. It was a dumb question anyway. Dave, thanks very much.
No problem.
All right, pass the phone back to Mandy.
Hello, Neil. It's Mandy.
Hi. Anybody else there for us to talk to?
Yes, there's actually Gianna Cox from Westerville, who is right near me in line. Just one moment. Hello.
Hi, Gianni.
Yes.
Hi, Gianna, excuse me. It's Neil Conan at National Public Radio. How are you today?
I'm well, and yourself?
I'm good. You've been waiting online a long time there?
Yes, about 3.5 hours.
And what?
I expected that.
You expected it, so what? Did you bring a snack?
Actually, no, but they were actually giving out granola bars and water, but I did bring an MP3 player and a book.
And which book did you bring?
I brought Omar Tyree, The Pecking Order.
Uh-huh. And what's on your MP3 player?
Say it again.
What's on your MP3 player?
Oh, I got a little bit of everything. I got a little bit of Corinne Bailey, Beyonce, Nelly, some gospel. I got a little bit of everything.
And again, why are you going to all this trouble to vote today when it might be actually easier to vote tomorrow?
Well, you know, I voted in 2004, and actually, because I had to wait so long, at the time I had a job. So when I left my job to go vote, it was 9 o'clock in the morning, but I actually didn't get back to my job until my shift was over. So I wanted to kind of get this kind of out of the way because I know so many people are going tomorrow.
So you think it might be worse tomorrow than it is today?
Yeah, I really do.
All right. Thanks very much, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
This is Mandy.
Mandy, thanks very much. And so the people, have you met anybody who says, look, this is just ridiculous, I got to go home?
I did. I did meet one young man. He waited over 3 hours and then left. He was going to be late for an exam. I think he was a local college student. So he did leave. But he's the only person that I've talked to thus far who has not left.
One of our larger
who has left rather.
Who has left rather? Yeah, one of our larger universities being nearby there. Yeah.
That's correct. The Ohio State University is here, so I'm sure there. I have seen numerous students. Actually, there are a couple of young men. I believe they've already gone in that had backpacks strapped to their backs and asked them if they had been studying. They said no. They've just been interested in talking to folks around them, so they haven't even been studying.
Okay, Mandy, thanks very much for your trouble. We appreciate your time today.
Thanks so much, Neil. It was a pleasure.
Mandy Trimble, the news reporter for member station WOSU in Columbus, Ohio, with us from the Veterans Memorial polling station in Franklin County. So those of you who've waited online for early voting this year, how did you pass the time online? Let's talk with Tim. Tim's with us from Interstate in Indiana. I assume you're on the interstate in Indiana.
Yes, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just want to say I love your show, too.
Oh, well, thanks very much. It's kind of
Yes, actually, I waited, just finished voting, actually, a couple of hours ago and waited for 3.5 hours. So it was quite a bit of people there that were actually taking numbers. And if you did not want to wait and sit and wait there at the courthouse, you could actually take the number and come back closer to time to vote, which is actually what me and my friend did. So and I can actually say that I've never loved my BlackBerry more.
So you were online doing your emails and surfing the web?
Yeah, just surfing the web and actually to the previous section earlier in the hour, checking my Facebook and commenting on other people's blogs and things like that, too. So I use my BlackBerry for everything, on the internet. But today was to pass, but the 3.5 hours actually kind of cruised by faster than I thought. So
it does challenge your battery life, though, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It does very quickly.
All right, Tim, drive carefully, all right?
All right, thank you very much. Thanks, Neil.
So long. Here's an email we have from Brian in Columbus, Ohio. I voted early yesterday and waited over 6 hours. Pizza and bottled water were provided by whom? I don't know. Let's see if we can get Mary on the line. Mary's with us from Birmingham in Alabama.
Hey, I'm planning to vote tomorrow because we didn't have really early voting except for absentee.
Right.
But I plan to take a camp chair and a novel that I'm reading and my son's iPod.
And your son's iPod.
I don't have one, but he's got some great Bruce Springsteen on there because I told him to. And I'm going to be reading a novel called Run by Ann Patchett.
I'm unfamiliar with that, but I'm sure it's a good one.
Oh, she's a really good writer.
All right. Anyway. If it takes 3 or 4 hours, that's okay with you?
It's okay, yes. This is what we have to do. I mean, this is part of our American duty. So I'll do it. I'm not happy that it takes so long. Is this something that we didn't know was coming? I think we've had some maybe poor planning.
May be right about that, but turnouts had been going down for a long time, and then, it's just been the last several years, 4 years ago and again 2 years ago, they've really been turning up and people maybe caught by surprise.
Right. Well, I'm glad to see the participation, that's for sure.
All right, Mary, thanks very much for the call. Good luck.
Hey, thank you. Bye-bye.
We're talking to people who are waiting online or have waited online in early voting to get advice for those of us who will be waiting on long lines to vote tomorrow. 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Tracy's on the line. Tracy with us from Greenville in North Carolina.
Yeah, I waited in line about an hour and a half, and I took an extra laptop battery with me, as well as an extra battery for my BlackBerry, and that seemed to work out real well.
And you had a high-speed internet connection there?
I did.
And so that all worked out pretty well?
It worked out really well, but I think in my district, I was quoted by one of the judges that over a quarter of the people in my district in North Carolina voted early.
A quarter of the people?
30,000.
And that's already, and I guess people are still voting today?
A week ago.
That was a week ago, because I've heard estimates that is, 30% or more nationally will have voted already.
Correct.
Something like that. So while you were on using up all that battery life, what were you doing on your computer?
I was doing paperwork for my job.
So it was work.
Pardon?
So it was work. You're going to charge for it.
It was work. I did at one point check on my University of Washington Huskies on their internet blog. They're suffering with the worst record in the nation, but I didn't stay on there too long and went back to work.
Well, you get a new coach next year, so it may work out better for you.
I hope so.
All right, Tracy, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Here's an email from Deborah in Beaverton, Oregon. My suggestion, check out the real estate listings here in Oregon. All our elections are vote by mail. No lines, no hassles, no controversies at polling places. I already voted. All I had to do was drive up to the mailbox at my post office and toss in my ballot. After seeing this work so well in Oregon, I don't understand why every state isn't a vote by mail state. This from Daniel in Tennessee. I waited in line for about an hour and 15 minutes to vote on Friday afternoon over a week ago. This was in Wilson County, Tennessee, where they said the lines were never shorter than 45 minutes and as much as 2 hours during early voting. I had a Dean Koontz novel on my Touch iPod, which I read. Time passed, and I voted. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. Let's go to Julie. Julie with us from Tallahassee in Florida.
Yes, I'm in Tallahassee, and we voted early, and we stood in line for like almost an hour, and the thing that was so exciting was that there were people talking to each other, and it was, considering the fact that nobody walks anywhere and has conversations, everybody's in their car, it was really cool to have all these different people having conversations, and not everybody was voting for the same person, so that was really exciting.
And were people talking about politics, or were they talking about football?
Yeah, they were talking about politics, but they were also talking about their lives, too, which was really awesome.
So you meet a whole lot of people you wouldn't have ordinarily met.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, definitely. And Tallahassee's small, and I didn't know there were so many different people. So, it was really exciting.
All right, Julie, thanks very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye. Here's an email from Elizabeth in Layton, Utah. I stood in line for an hour, 45 minutes on Thursday. My advice, bring a jacket in case of cold, an umbrella in case of rain, something with earphones in case of obnoxious people online near you, and an example ballot that you've already filled out so you don't have to take more than a few minutes. And let's see if we can get Tyler on the line. Tyler with us from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Hi. I'm just looking for suggestions. My wife and I are voting in Michigan, and we have to take our 5-year-old and 1.5-year-old with us. And I just am worried about how long the lines are going to be, and I don't know.
Do you have one of those portable video players you could take a movie for the five-year-old?
Well, we do, but I'm just worried about holding his attention for more than an hour, especially if we have to stand in line.
It's going to be difficult. I would definitely bring food and, you know, maybe a spare diaper or two.
All right, thanks.
Good luck. And we have this from Lucy in New York. It seems to me that the perfect book to read while waiting to vote this year would be The Agony and the Ecstasy. On Twitter, that we got this from Galushka. I'll be voting tomorrow, and I'll probably bring a bag of Halloween candy to share with other waiters if it's busy. Amy in Alaska emails, from my early voting experience in Fairbanks, bring liquids, projects you're working on for Christmas, cell phones, warm hearts, and excitement for the historic nature of this election. It's also a good time to do some serious letter writing. Those are all pieces of advice for people who have been waiting, for those of us who will be waiting online to vote tomorrow. We thank you all for your time, and thanks to everybody who tweeted us and emailed us and gave us a call. Tomorrow, we'll be talking with members of the military on what their new commander-in-chief needs to know about what they do for a living and about their lives. Join us then. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. They're called millennials, or Generation Y, or sometimes the me generation. The oldest turns 31 this year, the youngest 11, and on election eve they are the subjects of two quite different estimates. The first, that they're only interested in pop culture and their friends don't read newspapers or watch the network news, are more engaged with computer games than civil society, that they haven't turned out to vote in the past and will disappoint again tomorrow. Then there's Don Tapscott's view. He calls this group the net generation. With their mastery of digital technology, they have already revolutionized electoral politics, he argues, and will go beyond that on Tuesday. The NGen will stay plugged in to revolutionize governance, the delivery of governmental services, and dominate 21st century politics in America. Well, we want to hear from NetGen today. How do you use the internet to express your politics? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And you can reach us on Twitter if you're a user of that online discussion tool. You can find us at twitter.com/TOTN. Later on in the program, we want to hear from those of you who have already waited in line to vote this year. What advice do you have for those of us who will be waiting in lines tomorrow? What did you do to pass the time? What do you wish you'd brought with you? You can send us email now. The address is talk@npr.org. But first, the net generation and politics. Don Tapscott is chairman of the NGenera Innovation Network. His new book is called Grown Up Digital. He's with us today from the studios of the CBC in Toronto. And nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
Nice to be with you, Neil.
And Don, every election we hear the same prediction that this is going to be the year that young people finally come out to vote in big numbers. And every election thus far, the answer is, well, not so much.
Well, there are two things that have changed. One is that the number of young people that are coming into voting age is grown dramatically. The baby boom echo, kids born between 1978 and 1997 inclusive, is actually 80 million youngsters. And this year, upwards of 23 million of them will vote, which is 3 million more than in 2004. But the other big thing that's changed is that this is not just a generation with huge demographic muscle who will, based on their demographic size alone, will dominate electoral politics in the 21st century. They're a generation that's different. They've grown up using the internet, digital technologies, and this changes the way that they are, the way that they think, the way that they learn, the way that they collaborate, and they're a force to be reckoned with in every institution in society.
You, in fact, argue that their brain structures may have been altered by the way they use the internet.
Well, yeah, I'm working on Grown Up Digital, I worked with a number of brain scientists, and I started studying these kids as a generation about 15 years ago when I noticed how my own children were effortlessly able to use all the sophisticated technology. At first, I thought my kids were prodigies, but then I noticed that all their friends were like them, so that was kind of a bad theory. So I started working with a few hundred kids, and it was a dozen years ago I wrote the book Growing Up Digital. Well, flash forward to today, these kids, the eldest are 30. They're in the workforce or in the marketplace, and tomorrow they're going to vote. And the big thing about their brains is that time online is not taken away from hanging out with your friends or learning the piano. It's taken away from television. The baby boomers watch 24 hours a week of TV per kid. And these kids watch a lot less TV, and they watch it differently. When they come home, they turn on their computer, and they're in three different windows and chatting on it. On their phones, or texting more likely, and they're listening to MP3 files with three magazines open, and oh yeah, they're doing their homework at the same time. And the television is sort of in the background. It's like Muzak or an ambient media. And what's happening is that when they're online, they're thinking and learning and collaborating, and this actually affects your brain development.
Well, they're also affecting the way our politics is organized and funded. And you argue later down the road, they're going to change the way we, in fact, deliver governance to the people, the way government makes decisions.
Well, that's right. See, on this election, lots of people have talked about the Internet. And for sure, it's been used for fundraising and how results and activities are reported and how people follow elections with YouTube. You know, you can go and see Obama's speech on race or the Palin-Katie Couric interview. But the really big story is that this is a platform whereby young people are organizing. They have created a movement by the millions of them. And they're organizing on Facebook, on social networks. And the thing about Obama is that he understood this, that he created a platform whereby they could self-organize. So you go to mybarackobama.com, and anyone there can create a community. And there are communities of high school students in Cleveland, and every university has a community. I even found there was a community for people who think the last book I wrote, Wiconomics, is key to changing America. So this is a huge social movement that's happening, and we've really never seen anything like it before.
We're talking with Don Tapscott about Grown Up Digital, his new book. We want to hear from those of you in that younger generation. How are you using the Internet, the web, to make your political statement to the world? 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. Kelly's on the line. Kelly calling us from Myrtle Beach in Florida.
Hi. How are you today?
I'm well. Thank you, Kelly.
I use Facebook and as well as reading some articles and some different message boards to talk to different people about politics. I rarely ever watch the politics shows on television. I get bored really easily with them.
You're not the only one, Kelly, but how do you use Facebook?
I post relevant articles that I think that are important for my friends to know about, as well as read some of the ones that they post. There's a way you can share them, and everyone who's your friend can see what you think is interesting. So
you could also
read them that way.
You could also probably pull up a map and realize that Myrtle Beach is in South Carolina and not in Florida, as I said.
It's on the Atlantic coast. That's close enough.
It's close enough. And when you share these materials with your friends, do they send you stuff back?
Oh, yes. They comment usually on everything that I post, especially regarding politics. I have a wide, diverse, you know, friends list. Some of my family are conservatives. A lot of my friends are liberal. You know, I consider myself an unaffiliated voter. And just anything that has any sort of relevant information from a credible source, you know, it definitely sparks up debate.
Credible source. And now there's an interesting phrase. The Internet not entirely credible in some respects.
No, it's really not. I mean, you can go to any website and anybody will tell you anything about anyone. I mean, I was at a website the other day who just blatantly, you know, has his videos claiming that Barack Obama is a Muslim and a terrorist and things like that. The fact that people still believe these things is just amazing to me, but
it's pretty.
But what's really
Go ahead.
What's really interesting about that is that what I found in my research, and I've interviewed 11,000 young people, is that they've developed very sophisticated BS detectors, basically because there's so much BS on the Internet. You know, when I was a kid, I saw a picture. It was a picture. These kids see a picture. What is it, an animation or a bot or a morph? And so they're a generation of scrutinizers. Now, it's not perfect. And for sure, the BS that's coming out during this election is quite impressive. But overall, these kids have developed good filters, and they are forming their own opinions in ways that are very different than the way that their parents do, watching television or even watching the newspaper. I interviewed a youngster just a couple of days ago in front of an audience that she said she has 60 RSS feeds, and she likes to triangulate the news to get all kinds of differing perspectives. And someone had challenged her, saying, you get your news from Jon Stewart and The Daily Show on Comedy Central. And she said, well, that's not true. The Daily Show isn't funny unless you know the news.
Interesting. Kelly, do you watch Jon Stewart?
I do watch Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, and I find it incredibly hilarious. You know, all you have to do, you catch little inside jokes that he'll make about, you know, some random article on the Internet. And if you happen to have seen it, you know, you can laugh along with it.
All right, Kelly, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good day.
Let's see now if we can go to, this is Chris. Chris with us from Charlotte in North Carolina.
Yes, hi. Another question about, another comment about Facebook. It has a feature called status messages where from your cell phone or the computer you can write a little blurb what you're currently doing. You're at the movies, you're studying for class or whatnot. What I've seen a lot lately is people putting little political messages in that saying vote for Obama or whatnot in your actual what you're currently doing instead of going to the movies or whatnot.
And so you're on Facebook a lot, it sounds like, Chris.
Yeah, actually, it's really cool. Little functions on your cell phone. If you're driving down the street, you can just pick up your phone and put currently what you're doing there or anything else from anywhere.
And Don Tapscott, a lot of people would think this, you know, sort of self-referential, but you say this is an aspect of a new way of organizing things.
Well, yes, the so-called Generation Me. There's no evidence, actually, to support the idea that this is a little army of narcissists, as one book said. Basically, they're using this technology to self-organize and to do good things. Consider welcomebackamerica.org. This basically invites people from all over the world to upload their pictures, and you've got pictures from every country in the world, people celebrating in public places all around the world. Now, again, this is in support of Obama. Or how about video the vote, where you can take video cameras to voting stations and to make sure that there are no improper activities? You know, self-organization has been around throughout human history. Language was developed through self-organization. I'm holding a coffee cup right now, and there was no central committee for the English language that said this will be called a cup. But what used to take place over millennia or centuries can now happen very quickly. And people are using this global communication medium to communicate with each other, to form communities, to collaborate, and to self-organize.
Even to fact-check, because if you can check to see whether Hillary Clinton did in fact land under sniper fire in Bosnia.
Well, that's a good point.
Thanks very much for the call, Chris. Appreciate it. I think Chris has left us, but in any case, we hope you will join us. We want to talk to you, young people in the audience today. How are you using the Internet to make your political opinions and interests known? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And we're particularly interested if you think you're going to be interested in politics after tomorrow and how you're going to watch your government and help your government change and develop and grow. Again, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The net generation has arrived, Don Tapscott writes in his new book titled Grown Up Digital, and he argues this generation is beginning to transform every institution of modern life, from the workplace to the marketplace, from politics to education. They're replacing a culture of control with a culture of enablement. Today we're focused on the net generation's effect on electoral politics and government in general. If you're part of this generation, how have you used the Internet to express your politics? We got these two replies on Twitter from Dr. Dr. Gratis, the Facebook group is the new bumper sticker, and Aaron Ellenberg tweeted, "I posted about the need to be an educated citizen on my blog." Well, if you're a part of the Net Generation, how have you used the internet to express your politics? 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. You can comment on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. And again, if you'd like to be with us by Twitter, you can find us at twitter.com/TOTN. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And let's go to Rebecca. Rebecca with us from Kalamazoo in Michigan.
Hi. I'm calling just because I've observed over the past year or so that Facebook has really changed kind of the dynamic of how we interact with our friends. I'm 30. My husband is 31. And we just post on Facebook regularly, and most of our friends are on Facebook. And it's just really ratcheted up the intensity of this election season for us because most of our friends are very conservative. And my husband has been posting very publicly his support for Obama. So it's just become a much more public thing than it would have been 4 years ago.
And has this been persuasive, do you think?
I don't know that it's been persuasive, but it's definitely brought about some a lot more interaction around the issues than we would have had previously.
And I wonder, does this, do these conversations, these interchanges, do they get angry sometimes, or are people civil?
They're generally civil, although there has been more exchange of kind of biting, dumbed down one-liners than I would typically like to see. I think it's easier to do that in writing than it is to do face-to-face.
I think it is, yeah. There's a little friction that gets added when you do it by remote control, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Rebecca. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Don Tapscott, one of the things you argue in your book is that, in fact, this new generation, this younger generation, this net generation, is not going to tolerate things like, attack ads and wants things to be more civil and doesn't want things to be argued from the extreme left or the extreme right.
Well, I think that's true. That, first of all, they're the most diverse generation ever, and there are all kinds of measures of that. You know that 90% say it's okay for blacks and whites to date, and that's up from 56% in 1988. And 60% of them support the idea of gay marriage compared to 37% of the general public. So they're much more open, and they want to have real conversations. And I went out on a limb, you know, with books, you have to put these things in the can a few months earlier.
Yes, indeed.
And I said, attack ads are a big mistake. And I think that turned out to be true. I mean, they want to talk about the real issues. And
yet we see both candidates launching attack ad after attack ad.
Well, it's a funny culture that we have. And it's a whole political culture that needs to change. Like, consider after the election, you know, assuming the polls are right and Obama wins, if he says to the some 15 million young people who brought him to power, gee, that was really great. Now you just go be quiet and passive for 4 years, and then 4 years from now we'll do it all over again. That's not going to work. And so he's going to need to engage these young people in all kinds of new ways. For example, we can now have a digital brainstorm or a discussion of millions of people over a three-day period on the internet. And we need a political culture whereby he could just say, well, I don't know about that, or here's a crazy idea I'm thinking about. And a culture whereby the media and other people won't get all over them, but where we can start to open things up and have a more intelligent conversation about the real issues. Because Lord knows, there are some big problems in the world.
A digital brainstorm to say, look, we've got this situation with the economic crisis. So starting Monday at 12 o'clock, send me your ideas, good, bad, indifferent. The good ones will rise to the top. I'll post every day. I'll be reading all this stuff, and let's see what develops.
Well, these things have been done on a lower scale, smaller scale. IBM, for example, held a discussion of 400,000 employees over a three-day period. But I'm now in discussions with government leaders in several countries that are very serious about doing this. And this is not direct democracy. Don't get me wrong. You know, Ross Perot in the electronic town hall, you get
right
to vote every night on the evening news. That's AKA the electronic mob. The democracy is a lot more than majority rule on a nightly basis. But what we're talking about here is engaging citizens, especially these young kids who've grown up interacting rather than watching TV, engaging them in political life. And when you do that, good things happen, from my experience. Initiatives get catalyzed. People start to learn more. They become more open, as Rebecca was alluding to. They become more open to having real conversations. This is going to be a big change, and I'm hopeful that we're in the early days of something significant.
Let's get Brian on the line. Brian's calling us from York in South Carolina.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, please.
You guys have kind of alluded to the conversation aspects of it, so I'll just throw in one other thing. The dissemination of information. I'm active on several political blogs, and I have been so up to date and kept in the know about what's been going on in both campaigns through these blogs, because through the use of digital media, if somebody says something, an hour later, it's up on the net. And thousands of people see it, and then hundreds of thousands, and it spreads across. And I think that is one of the things that the net has really brought in, is this expansion of conversation and dissemination of information.
And what? How is it different, do you think, Brian, than the way your parents' generation would have?
Well, my parents' generation, you know, it was you got your information from the newspaper. You got your information from maybe half an hour of nightly news. There wasn't, you know, there wasn't CNN. There wasn't MSNBC. Thankfully, there wasn't the Fox. And now, where you've got so many different media outlets and so many different places to talk, and such ease at spreading this information. You guys were talking about The Daily Show.
Mm-hmm.
And last month, they did this side-by-side comparison, you may have seen it, of two of McCain's speeches.
Right.
That were absolutely identical.
It was John McCain versus John McCain. Yeah.
Exactly. And the next day, that little snippet of video was posted in three different blogs that I go to, all of which have combined, I'd say, you know, 10,000-15,000 members.
So it really gets out, and of course, once it's on YouTube, millions of people can see it.
Exactly. And each person, you know, each of these people who's on this political blog, they have their own private blog. And so they'll see that. I did it myself, you know. I saw that, nabbed the embed code, put it on my blog, and then everybody who was on my friends list who isn't on the same blog, they got to see it.
Don Tapscott, what he's describing, I guess, is the word we use as viral, though I can hear copyright lawyers shuddering even as we speak.
Well, it's viral, but it's also real time. I guess that's the other adjective. I was interviewing a young woman in front of a panel recently, and I sort of challenged her. I said, aren't you part of the dumbest generation, Neil? As you know, there's a book of that title that says how the digital age stupefies young Americans and jeopardizes our future. I said, you don't know anything. You don't read the newspaper. You don't watch the evening news. What hope is there? And she puts it back to me. She says, well, it's true I don't read the newspaper. She says, but have you ever seen one of those things? Like they come out once a day. And they don't have hot links, and they're not multimedia, and you get this weird black stuff all over your fingers. And she explains...
Oh, it's the staff of life. Go ahead.
She explains how she likes to, to triangulate the news. And she says, and I like to know what's happening all the time. I like to know what the candidates are doing right now. And I said, well, what are the candidates doing right now? And she pulls out a PDA, and in 10 seconds she says, so-and-so. And I just noticed here, I got a Twitter, Obama's in Jacksonville. Florida, and he said this, and if I click on it, I can go over to a live feed of the video and watch him giving his speech. So an obvious corollary of this is not the dumbest generation. This is this mean-spirited attack on young people today is completely without foundation or fact.
We got this on Twitter. Zeke says so. The net allows people to get news and opinions outside of mainstream media. We're skipping the filter that our parents had. So, Brian, punching it right on your point. Thanks very much for the call, Brian.
Thanks a lot. I'm actually on my way to the Obama rally in Charlotte, and I'll be live vlogging it there.
And thanks very much. And we got this from Kathy. My son called last week and said that he was voting while talking to me on the phone. He was looking up information on the internet about the various Arizona propositions and then making his decisions. One, he was multitasking. Two, he was using the internet for information, not the newspaper or TV. Both typify his generation. And, of course, using the internet with a mobile device, not the big computer that dinosaurs like me lug around. Let's see if we can get Hassan on the air. Hassan is calling us from Saudi Arabia.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I am well. How are you doing?
And are you considered part of Generation Net?
I'd say so. I'd say so. The main point that I actually wanted to make while I'm calling in today was that the internet is so easily accessible over here in Saudi. Much more than that, I mean, we have Wi-Fi coming here and optical cable to the home, so we should be expecting, you know, speeds over 12 megabits per second anytime soon. But
well, let me ask
young
you,
community here. Sure, sure.
Well, we're talking about how this young generation has helped revolutionize politics in the United States. Do you think it's going to change politics in Saudi Arabia?
Do I think it's going to change politics here? I don't know. But do I think it's changing political awareness in terms of what's going on in the world? Absolutely.
Because people no longer have a monopoly. I was there many years ago, and there was just a couple of newspapers, and there was state That's television correct. And state radio, and that was correct. Pretty much it.
There was Arab News and Saudi Gazette, and they're still there.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, I mean, there is a huge subculture here for forums, online forums, where people can post everything they want, and they almost always have a political section.
Interesting.
In fact, we have, this is going to sound a little interesting, we have a post-election barbecue on Thursday.
Yeah. So after the American election, do people
after the American election? I mean, it's a mixed gathering of locals and people from abroad, and we figured it's a Thursday, which is a weekend here, and we'd get together and, you know.
Well, tune into this show. We're going to be doing Talk of the World on Thursday, so getting opinions from around the world. So if you can hear us today, you can definitely hear us then. But I also have to ask you, do people feel safe exchanging political opinions on the net?
Yeah. There's people from all avenues that are exchanging information. I mean, you have to understand that you have your, you know, you can write what you want, but doesn't mean that necessarily people are going to agree with you all of the time.
Okay, but it doesn't mean necessarily you're going to get a knock on the door the next day either.
Oh, yeah. Well, I haven't experienced that yet. Thank you.
All right. Hassan, good luck to you. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Well, it raises such a good point, Neil, that the old media that was at the center of elections, print and broadcast, was one way, and it was one size fits all, and the owners controlled the message. And now we have the antithesis of that. We have this global communications medium that's highly decentralized. It's distributed, and it will sort of be what we want it to be. It has this awesome neutrality. And hopefully there are more good people in the world than bad people. But for sure, this is transforming politics profoundly. I think about the Mideast. If you look at demographically at a country like Iran that has a huge population explosion in terms of teenagers and young people in their 20s. And you have a very sort of restrictive society, but all these kids have got access to secular information because the penetration of the internet is very high. Right. So this is going to create all kinds of disruptive forces as people can find out what's really going on in the world.
We're talking with Don Tapscott about grown-up digital, how the net generation is changing your world. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Let's talk with Heather. Heather's with us from Jacksonville in Virginia.
I'm in actually Jacksonville, Florida.
Florida.
Yeah. And yes, I was calling because I'm, I guess, what they would consider the top part of that next generation. I'm 30. And I've voted in every election since I turned 18, but I've never been politically active before until this election. And there's an amendment on our ballot here in Florida for the quote unquote the Marriage Protection Act. And, I've gotten really involved in the campaign to vote no on that just because I think it's misleading. And I've done all of my actions have been done through email. I've gone online to find out the information. That's actually how I joined the group because they are based out of South Florida. So I've never even actually met the people that I work with every day. I've sent everything through my email of my address book. I use MySpace. And my husband has Facebook, so I post stuff on his. And pretty much just, you know, I even you know, I've even written into the editors of the newspapers, which I don't really read, on the internet. So I don't even, you know, back when I was 18, the newspaper was all I had to go and look at the issues. And now I feel like I've been able to do a lot more, especially when I'm juggling young kids and life and work. The internet's just much easier, and I feel like it's much more empowering.
And Dawn Tapscott, she speaks to another thing you write about in your book, and it's the decentralization of this. She's there in Jacksonville working with people she's never met in South Florida on an issue that matters to them, and this is happening in all kinds of different combinations on all kinds of different issues all over the country.
Well, indeed, and people can self-organize to create communities on any topic, and these communities typically involve people that they don't even know who they are. The other thing, of course, is that the organizers of these campaigns, and I use Obama here because it's just a better example, they have an iPhone application. It's like a whole campaign in your pocket. It scans all your friend list to find out who you've called, who you haven't called. It uses your location to pinpoint activities and events near you. And if someone asks you a question about, say, Obama's position on civil rights, it links you to all of the policies, gives you talking points that you want. There's a media page that connects you to all photos and videos of the campaign. You can watch them in Colorado real time. This is like in the pocket of hundreds of thousands of organizers.
That's my next buy too. Is that that's what I really want, is that actual the iPhone he's talking about. Just because I have my work and just everything that's happened in this election, and I'm a person who just is never at home, and pretty much I only listen to the radio, which is NPR, and then I'm on the computer. So the one thing I wanted to ask
we're gonna have to put it off for another day, Heather. I'm afraid we're out of time.
No problem. Hey, but thank you, and I hope everybody votes.
All right, Heather, thanks very much for the call. We did get this Twitter from Antonio Capo. The next generation chips away the top-down power culture with a borderlessness and enabled community. Borderless and enabled community. If I could read, I'd be dangerous. Dawn Tapscott, thank you very much for your time today.
Okay, my pleasure.
Dawn Tapscott's new book is Grown Up Digital. He joined us from the CBC in Toronto. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.